Welcome to Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment. Visionaries Global Media, envisioning excellence on a global scale.
Hey, Deez. You know what you don't get enough of these days? You know, like pins, but in wrestling form.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Actually, I know the place. Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Have you heard of them?
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com.
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Funnily enough, you should mention it, because they've got awesome pins like, I don't know if you can see that, The Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior, and the man himself, Hulk Hogan. They do mugs, they do stickers, they do everything, mate. Really high quality. You know, like really affordable, really high quality. Like you say, you don't get stuff like that very often anymore.
No, you don't. Yeah, and is that unique. The one where you put the promo code IOHPOD15 and you get 15% off your order?
I believe it is. That's basically free postage and packing.
Yeah, IOHPOD15 for 15% off your order. And of it, that goes with all of the discounts and stuff they've got on at the same time.
Yeah, and they, as far as I know, they're regularly doing sales, new pins, like pretty much every week. They do giveaways, they do competitions, they do games on their social media, stuff like that.
That's brilliant. So head on over to wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. That's wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of It's Our House podcast with Faz and Deez. I'm Faz, and that's Deez. How are you, mate?
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Thank you very much, mate. How are you? How are you?
I am great, and we're going to skip all the pleasantries, and we're going to introduce the biggest name that we've ever had on this podcast. He's just everything in entertainment, in wrestling, and thank you so much for coming on the show. It's Mr. Eric Bischoff. How are you?
I am doing well. And guys, thank you very much for the invitation. This is a great way to, in my case, start my day. In your case, perhaps ending it, but nonetheless, I'm really, really excited to be here. Thank you very much.
Oh, it's our pleasure.
Yeah. Pleasure is all ours, honestly.
Yeah, thank you.
When we started this about 4 months ago, honestly, I'm not just saying this for the sake of it. I always said that you would be my ultimate top tier guest. If I could have anybody, it would be Eric Bischoff.
Well, first of all, thank you very much. That's very flattering. And I don't mean to diminish that, but I'm really glad that you guys reached out, because I mean, there's two reasons doing this podcast was important to me. The first reason is that, you know, you made it clear you guys are starting out, you're building something, you're trying something new, you're doing something you love to do and you have passion for, and you're taking advantage of this wonderful thing we all have now called streaming and platforming and podcasting. So I love to encourage people like you guys that are just starting out. And if there's anything that I can do to help, I'm always excited to do that. Number one. Number two, you're in the UK, and there's probably not a better place to be a wrestling fan than in the UK.
So
and
true.
I love the UK fans. They're a special fan. And I've always said that, you know, every part of the United States, every city, every state has its own unique personality. Well, the same is true around the world. And the UK fans are some of the best fans I've come across in decades. So I'm glad to have this opportunity.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we can't wait to have crowds back, let me tell you, just so we can have that interaction again. Yeah. Hopefully it's sooner rather than later.
Hopefully.
But we'll go straight into the questions. Honestly, it's amazing this. So obviously you've recently been on AEW, and you know you've had your time in WWE, you've had your time on obviously WCW. But what do you think of the recent merger with AEW, New Japan, Impact, ROH, and NWA? Do you think it's good for the business, or do you think there's going to be a lot of casualties along the way?
You know, I don't know what the casualties would be. You know, so many times I think wrestling fans, because of the nature of the product and the loyalty that's associated with each new promotion or each big promotion, I think there's always this kind of mentality where, you know, wrestling is a zero-sum game, meaning if more people like the product that you happen to like, then that means I'm losing because less people appreciate what I like.
Yeah.
And then that turns into a, you know, a battle, if you will. And some of that is great because it reflects, you know, passion and loyalty and in some cases a particular style of wrestling or presentation. But oftentimes the good of that kind of, you know, territorial war or brand war escalates into, you know, kind of negativity and things that you hear and read that really don't do anybody any good.
Yeah.
I love it when companies work together. I love it when, for example, with AEW now, what does it mean? You know, they're going to, you know, work together. It can mean any number of things. It can mean very little. It can mean a lot. We don't know for sure what that will mean eventually, but at least in the beginning, I think it's fair to assume that we're going to see more talent here on United States television in prime time from around the world that we wouldn't otherwise get that chance to see within our weekly, you know, television schedule.
Yeah,
that's great. We'll see a different style of wrestling presented as a result of that. That's fantastic. So I can't think of any downside. The only downside I think are in the minds of people who look at broadening their wrestling horizon as some weird form of zero sum game. And yeah. I don't.
It is crazy, isn't it? Where so many fans are just dedicated to one product. You know, as you said, there's such a world out there of wrestling for everyone to go and experience, and getting it on our screens is better, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it is. And it often, you know, when I'm doing the podcast 83 weeks, I often take questions and deal with issues that are, you know, current, even in today's environment. We don't just talk about the Monday Night Wars. And, you know, what's incumbent upon every wrestling promoter, big and small, from the WWE and AEW on down to local independent promoters in your hometown, you've got to find a way to grow the business. And growing, you can't grow the business in a vacuum. You can't just preach to the same choir every single week and expect more people are going to show up in your congregation. Now, obviously, we're talking about wrestling and not religion, but the idea is exactly the same.
Very much so.
And I think by expanding, you know, you get that feeling that, wow, you know, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger all over the world. That's a damn good thing, man.
Definitely. 100%.
Yeah. Absolutely, please. Yeah. Like you say, it's that tribalism, isn't it? That everybody's always looking for a reason to hate something else.
Is it not to get political or cultural? Because this is more of a cultural issue than, or as much of a cultural issue as a political one. But politics are a part of it. But you're right, the tribalism. Man, yeah. If you say one thing and I don't agree with it, you know, you're the bad guy. It's even gotten to the point now, if I say one thing and you don't repeat what I say, you're the bad guy. You know, it's like, gosh, almighty, people, just take a breather. You know, wrestling needs to be, my style of wrestling, and this is what I was going to mention about the podcast, the style of wrestling, the presentation of wrestling that I like as a 65-year-old wrestling fan that also spent 30 years in the industry is different than the style of wrestling or the presentation that you guys might like.
Yeah.
So if somebody's out there promoting wrestling, producing wrestling for television, doesn't it make sense to give me a little bit of what I like?
Exactly.
Give you a little bit of what you like, and maybe give somebody else something that's completely different than you and I like, but they really like it. And I think the mistake that oftentimes producers, I being one of them, people that write about wrestling fans that get on chat boards and talk about wrestling, you know, they sometimes forget that you have to, in order to be successful in the long term and continue to grow, you have to appeal to the widest variety of people that you can. Definitely. Scratch my itch, scratch your itch, scratch that guy over here's itch. That's how you grow an audience. Not by going, okay, this is what I like, so I'm going to give that to everybody and expect them to like it too. It doesn't work that way.
No, it's exactly why we want to change what we're doing on the podcast, isn't it? It's why we want, you know, more guests of a different variety. We want to give as much people across the platform we can have.
Yeah, absolutely. When we speak about tribalism, obviously that's become more of an issue since the inception of AEW. AEW was obviously a good thing for the industry. It gave WWE some real competition that they'd obviously not really had since WCW and since maybe TNA and Impact to a lesser degree. But what do you make of AEW's recent reliance on, well, on doing things that people criticize WWE for? So obviously all the recent celebrity involvement, people like Snoop Dogg, Shaquille O'Neal, Mike Tyson, legends from yesteryear such as Arn and Tully and Sting. What do you make of AEW's reliance on those guys? Is it something that's going to be beneficial for them? Because obviously it's something that you've got good experience of in WCW with celebrity involvement. So do you see this helping AEW in the long term?
It's a strategy, right? It is a creative and branding strategy. And they're doing exactly what we just talked about. They're finding very recognizable, you know, let's take the non-wrestling celebrities out of it and separate the Snoop Dogs and Shaquille O'Neals from the Arn Andersons and the Tully Blanchards and the Stings and the Chris Jerichos, you know, and as of late, the Big Show.
Yep.
All right. Those the names I just mentioned, from Big Show down to Jericho and everybody in between that were WWE talent. Sting, you know, WCW talent. You know, okay, he was in WWE for a cup of coffee, but that really doesn't count, right? Well, really, I mean, Sting had a 30-year career or whatever. Yep. It was in WCW or in that region of the country. Sting is not a WWE guy. No, I don't think anybody recognizes them. And so what has AEW done? They've gone after guys like Jericho, who was a strong WCW character and an even stronger WWE character, and the Big Show and all the other people that AEW has brought on board, Arn and Tully, and featuring them, not just bringing them on board and giving them a backstage role, but you see them, they're there, they participate in the show. So what is AEW doing? They're recognizing that there is a mass audience out there, a big audience, I should say, not the mass, but a big portion of that mass audience that still likes to see that talent.
Yeah.
They may not want to see them wrestle, but it represents a part of wrestling that they really, really remembered and loved growing up. Okay. It's no different than, you know, in your country, football, and my country, soccer, or rugby, or anything else. You know, you want to hear from those legends of the sport. You may not expect to see them on the field, but you love their participation because that segment of the audience really relates to them.
Yeah.
Even though they're not playing. Same is true in AEW, or same is true with the strategy that AEW is using. Now, in terms of the non-wrestling celebrities, that's not as much of a strategy. It is in a sorts, but it's more of a tactic. It's a tactic to get the attention of the business to business side of the television industry, the advertisers.
Yeah.
Is what they're really doing by saying, hey, we're not just a wrestling show. We've got all this other mainstream pop culture celebrity attached to our product as well. So there are two different strategies. One to satisfy an audience, being the former WWE, WCW talent, and the other pool being the non-wrestling celebrities who are there to speak to the business-to-business side of the industry. Now, if AEW or any company were to overemphasize that strategy or those tactics, as the case may be, at the expense of bringing in and exposing new, young, exciting talent, that probably could be a setup for a dismal failure,
yeah,
or a mistake at least. But when you do a great job of balancing, satisfying that older demographic with the credibility and the memory and the branding and the association, all the good things that come with them, without hurting in any way, shape, or form your strategy to bring in new, young, fresh talent, that's like a really great night at the orchestra. That's everybody working together to make beautiful music. That's brilliant. The key is balance. And I think AEW has done a fantastic job balancing that.
Yeah, as you said, it's TV gold, isn't it? And that's exactly what everyone's pulling in for. So you mentioned Sting. So you know, how do you feel AEW's using them so far? You know, I don't know if you have any communication with them, but, you know, what do you think his intentions are now that he's, you know, in the latter stage of his career? Do you think it is to build Darby Allin and people like that? Are you happy with him being in the ring?
I am. I'm going to answer that same answer, but two different reasons why I feel the way I feel. On a personal level, I could not be happier for Steve Borden, the man who plays the character Sting.
Yeah.
He's a friend of mine. I have nothing but love and respect for him. Probably more now than I've ever had because of who he has become. Yeah. He's always been a great person. He's become an even greater person. And I really respect him. And I know him a little bit. You know, I'm not like real close friends with him, but I've been around him for a long time. And at one point we got a lot closer than, you know, we were previously or have been since, just because distance and time is kind of, we've moved on. But
yeah,
I got to know Steve Borden, the man, pretty good. And I just have the sneaking suspicion that now that everything else in his life is good and he's on a really positive role outside of wrestling, and he's got this opportunity that very few people ever get to go back and revisit something that is so important to you,
yeah,
and do it on a high level and do it in a way that you were so proud of. However big or small, it doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be the greatest match of all time. It can be going out and wrestling a young talent like Darby Allin or anybody else and know that you're not only entertaining the audience in a big way, you're not only fulfilling a dream or a goal or taking advantage of a once in a lifetime opportunity to put a period at the end of your sentence exactly the way you want to do it, but you're also elevating young talent in the industry in the process.
Yeah.
My God, that's a trifecta of awesome.
It's as you said, isn't it? It's bringing it home. It's that full circle for him, isn't it?
Yeah. How could you not be excited for him? Even if you didn't know Steve Borden, if you only knew the character Sting,
yeah.
If you love the business. I mean, I can't make analogies with UK sports, but, you know, here in the United States, it's like, you know, a beloved quarterback, you know, in the NFL, who was forced to retire or chose to retire or retired and played his last game in a very dismal performance that he knew he should have won. And now that same quarterback, that athlete gets an opportunity when everybody else thought he was going to just play golf and wither away and go away. Now he has the opportunity to step back out on the field of the Super Bowl, maybe not the Super Bowl, but a playoff game.
Yeah.
And go out there and do a phenomenal job and have the kind of game that quarterback dreamt about having his whole life. Steve Borden, the man, and Sting, the character, now have that opportunity. And even if you don't know the man, it's a cool setup, man. That's great backstory. That's what heroes' journeys are made of.
Yeah, I love seeing him. I loved his debut. I've always been a huge fan of him.
Yeah, and it's quite appropriate when you look at all the comparisons between obviously Sting and Darby Allin, people saying that, you know, he's got that look and he's got that sort of mystique and that air of mystery around him and that he could be the next Sting. So it's definitely very cool to see him sort of nurturing that talent, because Darby Allin is definitely, you know, one for the future. He's going to be a big, big star. On the Sting topic, Eric, what did you make of his brief spell in WWE, the way that they treated him? Obviously, he came in, wasn't there for a particularly long time, but he did pretty much lose all of his matches. Obviously, he had the big match of Triple H at WrestleMania. You had that incredible moment with DX coming out, NWO coming out, one of my favorite WrestleMania moments ever. Did you feel like maybe they did Sting a bit dirty in WWE? Could they have given him a better send-off?
Look, I think it's fair to say that neither the WWE or Sting, Steve Borden, were happy with the way it turned out. It didn't meet anybody's expectations, but that doesn't mean it was intentional, you know, and I understand it. it's an easy thing to kind of say, well, they just didn't, they did him dirty. They didn't treat him right. Or sometimes people think, no, they brought him in intentionally to bury him.
Yeah.
Just Triple H wanted to prove one more time. He wanted to drive another nail in the WCW coffin. Okay. That's an easy kind of, if you're that type of person that likes to dive into that kind of narrative because you find some pleasure in negativity, that's a very rich pool of negativity that one could wallow in, because there's a lot of that mentality.
A hell of a lot.
But having worked in WWE and, you know, as an executive for a cup of coffee, not long enough for my coffee to get cold. But I knew, you know, I had worked there as a talent. In between, I had gotten to know a lot of management and a lot of people that were making decisions. And obviously, as an executive, I worked for a brief time, 4 months, pretty closely with Vince McMahon, almost on a day-to-day basis, and certainly with Bruce Pritchard and the rest of the team there. And I just can't fathom that there is a mentality there at WWE that wants to bury people just because they can.
Yeah.
I know that's the pool of narrative that people like to wallow in because they feel comfortable in that environment, but it's not true, folks.
Yeah.
But what could be true, and I wasn't there, so I don't know, but what could be true is, you know, for magic to happen, for great opportunities to happen, for great ideas to be conceived, people have to collaborate. And in that collaboration, there has to be a fair exchange of energy and emotion and ideas and passion. And I don't know, you know, did that level of collaboration, the way it needs to happen on a one-to-one basis, did it start out that way when Steve or Sting came in? Did Sting take an advantage of the opportunities that were in front of him with WWE? Did he step forward and say, hey, I want to try this, or I want to try that? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know, honestly. Conversely, did WWE make every effort to go, wait a minute. I know, there's a lot of different ways we could do this, but let's really look at a way, you know, to get Steve, you know, in this awesome spot. Maybe, maybe not. Or maybe there was the intent on both sides, but they never got around to communicating the way they needed to.
Yeah.
And when that happens, and it does, and it's not because nobody cares, it's not because nobody's invested, it's because there's so many other things going on that no matter who you are, if you're not careful and you don't take the bull by the horns, you know, the narrative is, you know, and people have taken advantage of things that Vince McMahon has said and others in WWE. But when they talk about grabbing the brass ring, what does that mean? That's a really cool saying, but what does it mean? Well, it means exactly what I'm saying right here. You've got to take it upon yourself because you're an incredibly fast moving, complex, overworked, amazingly fast moving machine. And if you don't step forward and grab a hold of something, that somebody else has an opportunity to say, wow, that's a really good idea, let's go with that, then both parties are so busy keeping the machine going that they never really get around to the best idea.
Yeah.
That's 90% of the time what happens, as opposed to, they just want to bury somebody. That's not what happens.
No, I'm so glad you said it, to be honest. And hopefully we can put another hatchet in those rumors that WWE go out to bury you.
No, and by the way, guys, I didn't go off on that tangent to put, you know, to bury a hatchet or anything like that. It's really just to help people broaden their perspective. Definitely. And appreciation of what everybody else does to try to entertain them.
Exactly, because that's the goal, isn't it? Why would you bury gold? It makes no sense, because Sting and Steve Ballman is gold. He is gold as a talent.
Yeah. And it was unfortunate that he picked up the injury against Seth Rollins when he did, because we don't know what could have laid ahead of him in the future. They could have booked him so much better. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yep. And neither does he. But now, guess what? He's healthy, because I know the person, you know, the human being, Steve Borden, would not put himself in a position where he put his well-being at an exceptionally high risk. I mean, you have to put yourself at risk anytime you step into the ring. By its very nature, what Sting does is dangerous.
Yeah.
But Sting is also a guy that knows his body very well. He's trained his whole life. He's an amazing athlete. And he probably has the wisdom now to work around and work within the parameters that he's dealing with from a physical perspective. And I expect you're going to see some really badass things out of Steve Borden as the character. And I just talking about it gets me excited.
Yeah. I mean, it was the wow moment when he took the powerbomb, wasn't it? I think a lot of people held their breath when he took that. But as you said, the week later, he's back on screen and he's showing that he's fighting fit.
Even because he knows how to do it. And, a powerbomb in particular, if there was ever going to be a test in terms of, Sting's neck and the vertebrae in his neck, stenosis, if there was a move that really would test whether or not he could go, that would be the one. That would be the most likely one to re-injure a neck injury.
Yeah.
Unless you had your,
He knows what he's doing. Yeah. And he definitely knows.
He knew he was ready. He knew he was ready. He knew he could take it. He would have signed off on it and saying that, I'm happy to take it. And I think as well, that's a big moment for Brian Cage as well. To be hitting Sting with a powerbomb, the first big move that he's taken in a few years now. That's a huge moment for somebody who's still fairly young, like Brian Cage. Right, moving away from AEW for a second. We've all got our thoughts on WWE at the moment. Obviously, things have been up, things have been down. SmackDown's been really good. NXT's been really good. Raw, there's a lot of things you can say about Raw. So what do you make of the current WWE product at a time where Raw 1 week can fluctuate between record low ratings and then the next week back up to 1.9 million?
I don't follow the WWE ratings and performance nearly as closely as people in the media do.
Yeah.
I find that, I'm interested in 6 month trends.
Yeah.
Year over year trends. Weekly trends mean absolutely nothing to me or actually anybody in the industry outside of the people that write about wrestling.
Okay.
It just doesn't matter. Now what does matter? Week over week, that's interesting. Not really, though. Month over month, that's interesting, but you can almost predict on a month-to-month basis what ratings are going to do based on weather here in the United States when such a large part of the country is confined indoors, even without COVID, is confined indoors throughout the winter. More people are watching television. Television can do a little bit better as a whole. NFL sports takes a little bit of a chunk out of that for WWE on Monday nights here in the United States. But what really matters is year over year. Have you lost audience this year compared to last year? And if so, how much? Did you lose more? Did you lose 10% of your audience this year and 5% of your audience the year before? That's kind of bad news.
Yeah.
That's a trend, a big trend. But the week-to-week stuff is nothing but clickbait for people with online newsletters. It just doesn't matter.
We need to ignore them, please, going forward.
Absolutely, yeah. No, it's good. It's good to hear that. It's good to hear that because people place so much importance on it. Like, 1.5 million people are watching wrestling every Wednesday night. That's the real story, That's
and by the way, there's a couple guys on Twitter. I'm going to be rude, but I'm doing it for a reason. I'm going to try to find him right now because he's really putting out the kind of data. Nobody's referring to him. None of the big, online guys use him that I'm aware of. Now, I could be wrong, but I haven't seen it yet. Use this individual as a resource.
Yeah.
But the kind of macro perspective that he's looking at in terms of year over year, demographics year over year, trends over a long period of time, supported by real and legitimate data, is what's really interesting to me. My curiosity as a former executive and as someone just loves the business, I still love the business, even if I'm not in it, but I'm almost more interested in the business of wrestling than I am in the what happens on Monday Night Raw version of the business, right?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of sitting back looking at the bigger trends. What do I care about? Is the wrestling industry as a whole, everybody, put everybody in that bucket. As a whole, in aggregate, is the industry going up? or is the industry coming down? If the industry is going up, where is it going up the most? Is it going up on the independent scene because that sector of the industry is really vibrant and growing? I love to see that, by the way. It was happening up until COVID. What's happening with the television audience? Is it going down, but the streaming platforms are going up? Okay, as a whole, if everybody's growing and getting bigger, I'm thrilled to death. But if that's not the case, I start to get concerned for my industry.
Yeah.
What was my industry? And now I start, just because it's my nature, I can't help it. I start thinking of ways, well, okay, if I was in charge of a wrestling company, what would I be thinking right now based on all of this information? I would not be worrying about what happened, you know, with my competitors' ratings the week before. It's just really fucked. It's such a waste of time because there's nothing you can do about that, but you can do something about the larger trends because you have more time to affect it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Deez, you know what you don't get enough of these days? You know, like pins, but in wrestling form.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean. Actually, I know of a place. Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Have you heard of them?
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com.
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Funnily enough, you should mention it, because they've got awesome pins like, I don't know if you can see that, The Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior, and the man himself, Hulk Hogan. They do mugs, they do stickers, they do everything, mate. Really high quality. You know, like really affordable, really high quality. Like you say, you don't get stuff like that very often anymore.
No, you don't. Yeah, and is that the one where you put the promo code IOHPOD15 and you get 15% off your order?
I believe it is. That's basically free postage and packing.
Yeah, IOHPOD15 for 15% off your order. And of it, that goes with all of the discounts and stuff they've got on at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. And they, as far as I know, they're regularly doing sales, new pins, like pretty much every week. They do giveaways, they do competitions, they do games on their social media, stuff like that.
That's brilliant. So head on over to wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. That's wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Moving on from that, actually, it fits really well.
Because I bored you and your audience.
No, because when you're talking about long-term trends, obviously, one of the companies, obviously, WWE has been around for a long time, but one of the brands within that is NXT. And NXT has been around for a long time, but they don't seem to be growing their audience. What would you do to change that? As you said, from a business side, from a business mentality, what would you do looking at that brand in order to make it grow?
Well, in fairness, there are no brands that are growing based just off of television ratings.
Yeah.
Which is really the only barometer that we have to discuss. Now, you could probably, if we really wanted to have a separate show, you know, and bring in some people that really knew what they were talking about, not people like me who are just kind of looking at all these things and making certain assumptions because I don't really know. For example, YouTube. You know, how much added value is there for AEW in their YouTube content? It could be massive. It could be pretty good. Or it could be really not that big a deal.
Yeah,
I don't know. As just someone sitting here, I don't spend that much time figuring that stuff out. I'm going to assume that they've got a pretty strong YouTube presence. Mm-hmm. AEW, because they really leverage it. I see them promoting it a lot. I know they're producing unique content for it and all that. So I'm going to assume there's a pretty sizable audience there. So if you took those two platforms, the television platform, which is it's all it is now, it's not really not any bigger than YouTube or as good as YouTube in some cases. Yeah. So you've got a television platform over here every week. And we know that the Nielsen company, however people may feel about them, is the gold standard of measurement in that category. All right, we got YouTube data. It's right there. Everybody can figure it out without any question. And it's real. It's legitimate. Yeah. Now, if you add those two together and AEW numbers are going up, that is awesome. Same with WWE. Maybe their television ratings are flat or deteriorating, but if their global footprint through digital, YouTube and everything else is growing, good for them. I don't know the answer to that. I don't have any reason to spend that much time thinking about it yet. Well, I say yet, just because I don't see any real big trends on the horizon.
Yeah.
But immediate horizon, long-term I do. But that's what people should be looking at. But from what we have to look at right now, just in the course, in the context of this conversation, WWE's television platform numbers are deteriorating. They're not flat. They may be flat for 2 weeks in a row, but as a year over year trend, they're going down. Now you can factor in COVID. Okay, we'll talk about that. That's a legitimate issue. AEW's numbers are flat.
Yeah.
They opened up. They premiered with 1.5 million viewers. Last week they did 800,000, which was considered a big hit. And it's held that 700 to 900 viewer level, AEW, since probably the third week they were on the air, all the way prior to COVID and now post-COVID. So arguably, that number is not a bad number. And here's another mistake I've made before when I answer a question like this. When I point out that a number is flat, people want to interpret that as being bad. It's not bad.
No.
In a world like television, where television ratings are going down for everybody across the board, flat is kind of a win.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's not the same thing as growth either. So when I say flat, I don't mean to indicate bad. I'm just suggesting that there's been no growth or decline in AEW's ratings, or, well, in WWE's case, they have declined year over year.
Yeah, I know. AEW, you said, didn't they, that WWE, I think it's like 4 billion YouTube views.
Oh, across October, November, and December, they had about 6.3 billion social media hits, which is crazy.
So, and I'm going to throw myself into this, because oftentimes I take quick snapshots of the industry based on the information that's available to me at my fingertips, right? Because I'm not in the business of analyzing this stuff, although I guess I should, because it comes up all the time on my podcast. So, okay, let me write this shit down so I don't forget to do some research. But that's a massive, think about that. What was it?
6.4.
Over a 3 month period?
6.3 billion. Yeah,
6.3 billion views. Now, this goes into the weeds a little bit. And if you guys listen to my podcast, you know what that means. But some of those are duplicates, right? Yeah. So out of that 6.3 billion, you may have one guy that's been on 1 billion times.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an exaggeration, right? So there's a lot, there's some duplication in those numbers, and there always will be, because, you know, if you're a big fan of AEW, you're going to go to this, you're going to go to that. If you're a big fan of WWE, you're going to go to the network, you're going to go to their YouTube channel, you're going to go to their website, you're going to go to all the other stuff that they have available. Those, you know, those numbers, sometimes one fan visits all those different sites.
Yeah.
So they're not unique individuals, but it doesn't freaking matter, man. It's 6.3 billion people.
It's insane, isn't it? I mean, I think I did the numbers in terms of, I think you can watch a video four times before it'll stop you per day. So we have, as you said, Eric, even if one person watches it four times, they'd have to do that over a 3 month period. How many times just to even get close to 100?
Yeah, but I wonder about, I'm gonna throw a little conspiracy theory out there for you guys and your fans.
Okay, love it.
This should get the entire world thinking. What if, and I'm not, okay, disclaimer, I am not suggesting what I'm about to say is actually happening, all right? So all you screwballs out there that want to, you know, say, you can't believe what Eric Bischoff thinks. I'm throwing this out there as entertainment.
Yep.
Okay. But what if there were bots that a marketing company could use to artificially populate the YouTube channel and make it look like many more people were logging on and watching than actually were.
Yep.
Now, I'm not saying that's happened. I'm not even saying that's technically possible.
It is. It is.
Oh, it's definitely possible, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Then it's happened.
Yeah, the only way they do it usually to weed them out is it's then advert revenue and then clicks from those adverts to then go on and purchase an item. A bot wouldn't do that because it just does the simple things. But yes, a bot can rewatch just a code, make it go round and round and change the VPN, change the IP so they can keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it. So, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah. That's what we do. Yeah. We only have one viewer.
Well, I'm going to talk to Conrad Thompson about that and see if we can bump up these podcast numbers a bit. All of a sudden, when you wake up one morning and you see that 83 weeks is more popular than Joe Rogan here in the United States, you'll know that I bought myself a bot.
Exclusive.
I'll have a whole room full of bot machines in the room next door to me. I'll be throwing them megabytes and megabytes and whatever the hell a bot machine eats. I'll be throwing it in here by the car full.
Oh, man.
Right. I wrote this question down and I was really excited to ask this one. I've been itching to ask this. It was going to be the first question. Dave Meltzer. We've all had a lot to say about Dave Meltzer over the years. There we go. You're laughing already. Everything. He's been doing his favorite conspiracy theory, tweeting out some bizarre things. And I'm going to read exactly what he said. He was saying about.
Oh, God. I got to be in the right mood for this.
Do you want to go get a drink?
Yeah, I have to go through the same kind of conversation in my own head as one might have when they're going in to have a fucking tooth pulled.
I don't think I need to ask it.
It's only going to hurt for a minute and then it's going to be okay.
It will. Only a minute. Only a minute.
I'm glad that you feel the same way about Dave as we do. Right. So he made these bizarre claims that every booker for decades and decades has learned how to book shows from reading his newsletters and listening to his shows. But then he also claimed that he was explaining the Raw and Nitro ratings to Zane Bresloff, who was asking them from him on your behalf. Now, I read this and just thought, there's no way, that's complete bullshit. There's no way this is real. Is there any truth to it, or has he finally just gone completely insane and started believing his own hype even more than before?
No, I'm going to tackle the ratings question first, and then I'll get back to
the other insane
Professor Meltzer from the Meltzer University of Booking. We'll get back to that in a second. But for the ratings, and this is what's really funny, okay? And I actually responded to Dave's tweet about, you know, the fact that he had to give Zane Bresloff a ratings lesson so Zane Bresloff could then homeschool me, because I didn't know what I was talking about or what I was doing. And I pointed out to Dave, first of all, that he needed real professional help, because there are psychiatrists, there are drugs, there are treatments of all kinds today that can deal with people that are, oh, delusional, so self-absorbed that they've lost any sense of reality. There's another term for it and it escapes me right now, but nonetheless, I suggested that he reach out to somebody that he loves and knows, that knows him and is willing to share this problem that he has with others in the hopes that maybe he would get some help. I hope he takes that advice.
Me too.
Now, in terms of the reality of it, and this is Dave, as somebody who was supposed to be the professor of professional wrestling, where only great bookers study, and knows the history of the industry. Dave would know, for example, that when I got hired by the AWA, my first job in the wrestling industry was to represent the television product, the company that was producing the product, which was the AWA. The product was professional wrestling. My job was to take that wrestling show and all of the data associated with it, including ratings and shares, and take that out, literally out on the road, literally get in my car and drive to meet program directors and television station general managers who live and die by ratings and shares and demographic data, right? So in order for me to successfully go out and present that product in syndication to that those people, I had to have a, not a fundamental understanding, I had to have a really good understanding of ratings and shares and demographic data, what it all meant and all the different ways it can be interpreted. I started that job in 1987 and I was damn good at it.
So Dave wasn't there.
So I'm thinking, wait a minute, did I forget everything that I learned over the course of 3 or 4 years? Did somehow it just disappear and I needed Zane Bresloff to come in and reteach me? Like I got hit in the head with a brick and the part of my brain that retained Nielsen data and ratings information just got damaged and I couldn't recall any of it. So I had to relearn it again. Thank God, Dave Meltzer. Where would I have been without you? If you don't reclip that, put it on social media. You guys are asleep.
Oh, we will.
Oh, don't worry. I'm all over it.
I'll be tagging Dave in that. Absolutely.
Yeah, Dave has lost
it. Oh, dude. Oh, he'll love it too. He'll block you after you do it.
of course.
He is kind of a bitch that way.
Yes, he really is.
That's the clip. That's just the clip.
Dave Meltzer is a bitch. Exclusive. An exclusive that everybody already knew.
Yeah. I am a clip machine here this Sunday in Cody, Wyoming.
Yes, you are. Right, we'll move on to some positive aspects of what's going on. Hopefully with the end in sight for COVID, the pandemic, vaccine, you know, things are getting slightly more back to normal. You mentioned obviously about ratings, TV ratings, people again coming out their houses, you know, they won't be watching TV explicitly. What do you see for wrestling getting back to normality? And do you agree with the 25,000 attending WrestleMania over 2 nights?
I'm going to just give you an honest answer. And I don't know. I don't know what to expect. I don't think anybody in their right mind should know what to expect. Yeah. I know what I hope for. I know what the trends suggest things might be like, but man, this shit changes every 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, I think from a macro perspective, you know, just stepping back and looking at the industry as a whole, I think one of the things that has come out of COVID, and some of it occurred much prior to COVID, but I think the emphasis for the television, professional wrestling television business model has changed over the last, it's been changing for about 3 or 4 or 5 years, but.
Oh, signal's gone a bit.
That being the live event business revenue stream, that section of the business, live events, I don't think is ever going to come back.
Okay.
The way it was pre-COVID. Okay. For two reasons. No, actually only for one reason. It's no longer necessary. The television licensing category of the WWE wrestling model and the AEW's wrestling model have become so much more significant over the last few years in terms of the amount of revenue that it generates that the dependence upon live event revenue has become less and less and less. So while one has been going up, the need for the other has gone down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing for two reasons. One is, while live event revenue has always been a significant, especially of the WWE business model, it's always been a big, big part of it. But it comes with a certain amount of risk.
Yeah.
Risk of injury, you know, risk of any number of things, big and small. Live events are, you know, they're very volatile. You know, the ability to get people out to arenas is often dependent upon what's going on, what else is going on in that community.
Yeah.
You plan a live event 3 months in advance, get everything set up, start advertising, start promoting it, find out that, boom, something else is going on in that community that kicks the hell out of you. It happens. That's the live event business in wrestling. So I think that now that the television side of the revenue model has become so much more significant, and because of COVID, companies have had to learn how to restructure their infrastructure, how to reconfigure how they do business to adapt to that. I think people are going to realize, you know what, it's not worth the risk.
Yeah.
Can we
yeah.
make more money? Sure. But if guys are getting hurt in house shows, that means they're not available for television, and television is the golden goose.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way, to be honest. So it is going to be really interesting when we're back to normality. If, as you said, WWE especially do stop these live shows, it's going to be
Don't get me wrong. Let me be clear. I don't think they're going to stop them. I think they'll still do some live events.
Yeah.
But I think where if WWE pre-COVID was producing 250 non-televised live events a year, that number may go down to 75 or 100.
Yeah.
Those will be bigger shows in bigger markets and arguably more fun because they'll be able to divert more resources to lighting and to the so it'll be more closely resemble the experience that you see on television. You know, often this is another reason why I think this is a good idea. I'm sorry, guys. I'm just talking my ass off here.
Go for it.
Go ahead.
One of the big challenges with the professional wrestling live events is people get excited about a house show because of what they see on television.
Yeah.
But what they see on television is all of the lights and the pyro and the backdrops and all of the things that go into producing a good television. Well, you don't see many of those things in a live event. It is, in some ways, a stark contrast.
Yeah.
But what if instead of doing 250 live events a year, some big, some small, you do 75 medium to big ones.
Yeah.
And you bring in the lights and the pyro and all the accoutrements that makes that live event feels close to what you would normally see on television.
Yeah.
Now that business model is healthy again, but you're doing it because you were forced to figure out a way to make more with less.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's keeping your talent healthy, isn't it, as well, at the same
happy.
Time? Yes.
And happy.
Now you're traveling all the time.
If he decides to get married, he can actually see his wife more than 45 minutes every other week.
Yeah, it is shocking, isn't it?
Yeah, and a lot of these guys have got families. Look at like people like AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan. They're taking breaks at the minute and recently so that they can spend more time with their young family, with their young kids. I think another thing to consider is how long is it going to take the general public to be comfortable going back into arenas surrounded by thousands of other people in these big mass gatherings. You know, it could, I don't know about what it's like in the US, but over here, we've got a lot of people that are scared to go to the shops. People that are scared to just go and do their grocery shopping, you know? So when festivals and football events and things like that are back on over here, it is going to take a while to get back to normality.
Yeah. And I like here in the United States, every state, you know, has its own, you know, laws and recommendations and enforcement thereof. So, for example, in Florida, it is pretty much wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, there are events going on in Florida. You know, you're going to see more and more and more of that because Florida is taking a very, I'll call it progressive approach to it, because the data over the last 12 months, based on the strategy that Florida has implemented, has been at least as good as some of the states that have taken the more draconian approach to it, locked everything down and shut down everything. There is very little difference in numbers. And if they are, they're trending better for a state like Florida.
Yep.
Now, that same contrast exists in almost all of the states. Some are, you know, like-minded, some are not. But I think it's going to take 2 to 3 years before the live event discussion settles down to the point where only a small percentage of people feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I think it's going to take 3 years to get there.
Yeah.
Here in the States. I don't know what it's going to be like where you guys are at.
Yeah, 100%. I think as well, I think the age demographic matters, doesn't it? Because a lot of the teens, are they going to be that fuss? Not really what we're seeing over here in the UK. A lot of the teens are booking to go to festivals and everything. But, you know, your older audience, as you said, they are going to struggle. A lot of them are full of fear because they're reading the news every day, aren't they? They're so focused on the dangers behind it. So, it is really going to be interesting to see how all industry, not just the wrestling, but all industry kind of copes with this.
I know about once a week or once every other week, I get an email reminder that I'm sitting on 4 Rolling Stones tickets that I bought a year ago this past February, because I was so excited to see the Rolling Stones, right? I mean, I've been a Rolling Stones fan since I was 10 years old. That's 55 freaking years. I've been dying to see the Rolling Stones, and I buy the tickets online. I just didn't buy any tickets, guys. I bought the best tickets I could find, right? And then about a month later, everything's canceled. And I look at this notification every day, knowing in the back of my mind, no matter how much I hate to admit it, I'm never going to see the Rolling Stones with these tickets.
I hope you do, Eric. I really do.
I hope I do too, but come on.
Even a private show.
Have you seen Keith Richards lately? 3 years? Come on. I'm praying for him, but I'm not betting on it.
Stay safe. Stay safe.
I think this e-ticket that I have for the Rolling Stones concert is going to be a collector's item. Or
something. You have to print it off.
Get it printed off and framed. Right. One thing that I wanted to ask about, because I don't know if it was ever really fully cleared up, was obviously we touched on it earlier. You had your brief time with WWE. Back in 2019, you were there for about 3 or 4 months. Paul Heyman was brought back in at the same time. And again, he lasted a similar amount of time. There were a lot of theories around the time of why you then left so quickly. One of the most popular was that you were fired over a ratings drop on SmackDown. But obviously, we've not seen anybody meet a similar fate for the drop in ratings on Raw. So what was the real reason? Was it Vince? Was it Fox? Do you hold any resentment over that, or was it all quite amicable?
I'll start with the last question first. It was very amicable. I consider Vince McMahon a friend of mine. We're not like close friends. We don't like chat on the phone. You know, when I'm in the East Coast, we don't go out to dinner. Nothing like that, right? But should I walk into a restaurant and see Vince McMahon, I would sit down and share a glass of wine with him. We would have a blast, and we would have a great conversation. So absolutely no hard feelings. And not only that, with regard to a lot of other people other than Vince, Bruce Pritchard is probably, who is right now Vince McMahon's, from a television perspective, right-hand man. Bruce Pritchard is one of my dearest friends. There are people whose names you wouldn't recognize because they're behind the scenes, but are very, very instrumental people, you know, as instrumental in some respects as Bruce. They may not have the proximity to Vince, but they're just as important, who are some of my closest friends and who are people who I have the most respect for of anybody I've ever worked with. So the relationship is fine. Now, as far as why it didn't work, you know, there's more than one reason, and I take responsibility for the vast majority of them. I didn't adapt. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take it back even further. I didn't really analyze the opportunity the way that I should have. And by that, I mean, I knew what the job was, and I had a sense of what the opportunity was. But what I didn't do was ask myself a really important question. Is this something that fits who I am now?
Yeah.
Meaning my personality. When I was 35 or 40 or 45, I would have approached that job much differently.
Yeah.
Probably much more aggressively, because that was my nature then. That is how I approached everything. I didn't approach anything. I attacked everything. As I've gotten older, I've become more analytical. As I've gotten older, I've realized that some of those aggressive tendencies that I had, while many of them were really effective, and were responsible for probably some of the greatest successes I've ever had, or the wrestling industry has seen as a whole in the last 30 years. But there were some of those decisions and some of those approaches I took that were wrong and could have worked out much better, or I could have avoided it all or completely had I been more analytical and thoughtful. Mm-hmm. So what happened is when I got to WWE, you know, a number of things happened. One, WWE has a very established corporate culture. And it's a very effective corporate culture. That's why they've become a $4 or $5 billion worldwide, you know, company, because it's effective. But the person I am today didn't really fit in that culture. I approach things differently, right? I operate differently. I also allowed myself to believe that I would have an ability to have more input or influence than realistically I had.
Yeah.
That was a big part of it. That was also, that was at the core of it, really. But my inability to adapt to that. See, this is where I fucked up. I'm smart enough to recognize that. In this case, I recognized it after the fact. But normally my instincts are good enough that I can recognize that. And I'm really good, always have been in my life, at adapting. But I didn't adapt, not fast enough. I didn't see that what I really needed to do was kind of go back with a little bit more aggression in order to have the influence I wanted to have.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be able to ease my way into it. There was no easing your way into anything at WWE at that level. You got to bring your best game day one.
Yeah.
And I didn't. I spent the first part of the game. I was there for about 4 months. I spent the first, you know, 2.5 months just getting a feel, because that's what I like to do. I like to get a feel. I like to watch what's going on around me and analyze it, and then come up with a plan, as opposed to coming up with a plan, forcing it through or trying to, and seeing what happens.
Yeah.
But it is what it is. My inability to adapt to a situation that I should have analyzed more than I did is the reason it didn't work out. No other reason.
Yeah. It's good to hear that. It's good on all teams. Are you looking to get back in the industry at that level in any form, shape, or way? Or are you happy with what you're doing at the moment?
You know, you've heard the saying, never say never. And I say that because I'm still very, I can get real passionate real fast about any number of things, not just wrestling. I mean, I've got other things that I'm doing in business that I'm just as passionate about as I've ever been about wrestling.
Yeah.
So it's not like I'm sitting around twiddling my thumbs, wishing I had something to do. A big part of me really misses the business of the wrestling business. I wouldn't necessarily want to be out on camera every week again. I love the chance when it comes up. You know, WWE is going to be out of my home next week, and they're going to be shooting some things with me that I guess is going to be part of something. I don't know what it is, and I don't want to talk about it beyond this, because maybe it's a surprise and I don't know it. But they're bringing a crew out here and next week, and I love doing that. I've worked with AEW in the past, making appearances, and I love doing that. So it kind of scratches my itch, so to speak, to get out in front of a camera and perform without the obligation of having to do it every single week. Yeah. Because at this stage of my life, travel's kind of a big damn deal for me. I just don't dig it.
Yeah.
COVID or no COVID, if I never have to step on a commercial airline again, unless I'm going somewhere I want to go, I don't ever have to do it again, and I'll be good with it.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Zoom, isn't it? You can have Zoom recordings whenever you want now. Yeah. Right, we'll move on to the last question. You recently spoke of Jim Crockett Promotions and how important they were to the birth of WCW. Obviously, we've heard that Jim isn't well, Junior, at the moment. He's been taken to hospital. Do you have many interactions with Jim, and did he influence you in any way?
No, and that's why, you know, the interview I was referring to is one that, you know, if anybody's looking for it, it's on adfreeshows.com. And it's something that Conrad Thompson, my partner on the podcast, does for that platform. He does these really super exclusive. I mean, he's interviewing people that either we've never heard from before or we haven't heard from in a long time. And even if we have heard from them many, 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 many years ago, Conrad has a unique ability to get a perspective and have a conversation with them that you will not have ever heard anywhere, ever. And out of that, you know, interview, I took a lot away from that interview. I learned a lot. in that interview, because to answer your question, I never had any interaction with Jim Crockett. I wasn't influenced by the NWA, because while I lived in the United States as a kid growing up and a young man growing up, the NWA wasn't really available where I lived on television. It was available primarily in the southeastern part of the United States or the southern part of the United States. But when I lived in Minnesota, I didn't know what an NWA was until I was in my 30s. So I wasn't really influenced, but it doesn't mean I don't respect what the NWO was and what Jim Crockett did, because the reason I'm sitting here talking to you guys today in the UK is because of the opportunity that I got in WCW. And the reason I had an opportunity in WCW was because of some of the things that Jim Crockett did before Ted Turner bought Jim Crockett's company. So it's all connected. And that's why, you know, going back to the beginning of this program, man, just sit back and appreciate all this stuff. Dig it, learn about it. Even if it's not your cup of tea, doesn't matter. Learn about it. Appreciate it for what it is. And I think the opportunity to go to a platform like we have at AdFreeShows.com and get these really cool interviews and hear from people that give you an entirely different perspective on the industry is really valuable and fun.
Definitely.
But no, I never had any interaction with them. And because of that, I wasn't influenced.
No, well, that's how, yeah, heads on over there.
Yeah.
Check the shows out. Definitely, I think we'll be doing the same thing.
And I want to, this will probably never even reach Jim, but hopefully Jim makes a speedy recovery, because we all know how much, you know, he's given to the business, given to the industry, and how important he was. I just want to ask one last quick little question, just to bring it back up a little bit from obviously that sort of like sadder note there. Just, it can be a one word answer, a one name answer. Who do you believe right now is
the next big thing in the business?
The next true megastar. Obviously, we've not really seen any huge, huge, huge stars since probably John Cena, somebody who's transcended the business. Obviously, Roman Reigns is on top at the moment. People like Sasha Banks, you know, over in AEW, you've got Darby Allin, who's definitely one for the future. But who do you see as being the next star, the next megastar? Or is there anybody?
God, you guys, you put me on a spot. I'm going to give you an answer, but just know that there's a lot of people that I hold in such high regard and have so much respect for, and I think are so valuable as performers and human beings, that I'm going to offend those people or at least disappoint them. And I apologize. But if I was in Las Vegas and I had one $100 bill and I was forced to place a bet on one person, I'd put it on Cody Rhodes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You can write this down.
Yeah.
You can mark this date. But I think when you talk about somebody who has the potential to transcend the business, is the way you guys put it to me, right?
Yep.
That means to become as big a star, or at least a star outside of the wrestling business, as inside of the wrestling business.
Yep.
That's how John Cena became a big star, because everywhere you looked, including WWE, but outside of WWE, you would see John Cena.
Yeah.
He going right back to what we were talking about before, WWE was preaching outside of the choir. And they connected with people that they weren't connecting with just on their wrestling show by using John Cena, because he had that potential and ability to transcend the business in that regard. Yeah. I think Cody Rhodes has the same potential.
Wow. Yeah. Here's it here first on It's Our House Pod. Excellent. So, Eric, I mean, you don't really need to do it, but because you know you're a bigger star than us, but is there anything you want to push before we say goodbye?
No, I just, you know, I hope people, you know, in the UK will take the time to listen to 83 Weeks, the podcast, technically 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff, but it's available anywhere you get your podcast. If you're really into some of the stuff that we talk about and do, check out adfreeshows.com over on Patreon. It's an amazing platform. You won't be disappointed. And other than that, man, I'm just happy to do things like this with guys like you.
Oh, no, honestly, you've absolutely made our Sunday, and thank you very much. You can follow me at Faz's Thoughts, at F-A-Z-Z-A-S Thoughts, indeed.
At PWCDs, and find us at It's Our House Pod, absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, so thank you, Eric, again, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I look forward to doing another one anytime you want.
Oh, honestly, we'll be in touch straight away. Probably as you leave, you'll get an email. So just get ready for that. And now away from our sponsors. Thank you.
All right, man. Take care.
Hey, Deez. You know what you don't get enough of these days? You know, like pins, but in wrestling form.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Actually, I know the place. Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Have you heard of them?
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com.
Wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. Funnily enough, you should mention it, because they've got awesome pins like, I don't know if you can see that, The Undertaker, Ultimate Warrior, and the man himself, Hulk Hogan. They do mugs, they do stickers, they do everything, mate. Really high quality. You know, like really affordable, really high quality. Like you say, you don't get stuff like that very often anymore.
No, you don't. Yeah, and is that unique. The one where you put the promo code IOHPOD15 and you get 15% off your order?
I believe it is. That's basically free postage and packing.
Yeah, IOHPOD15 for 15% off your order. And of it, that goes with all of the discounts and stuff they've got on at the same time.
Yeah, and they, as far as I know, they're regularly doing sales, new pins, like pretty much every week. They do giveaways, they do competitions, they do games on their social media, stuff like that.
That's brilliant. So head on over to wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com. That's wrestlingpins.bigcartel.com.